from KQED. Hey guys, from KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos, politics reporter here at KQED.
And I'm Scott Schaefer, KQED's senior politics editor. Today on The Breakdown, California's chief economist, Irina Asmussen.
She's sort of like the state's top fortune teller. She looks at what's coming down the pike, how that could affect the state's $190 billion budget.
And you know those charts Governor Jerry Brown is so fond of using at his budget press conference? We hear that's her doing, perhaps. Well, we got to ask her that.
That may be a fact that only us political junkies can appreciate. But all those reporters out there, shout out. We'll get to that soon. But first, let's talk about the Tuesday election. We are almost to this primary.
Almost,
finally.
It's no longer election day. It's election month. And the folks who tabulate every day how many ballots have been returned, I think about 10% of the ballots that were mailed out to voters have been returned.
I dropped mine about an hour ago.
I saw you. You asked me where the mailbox was.
I mean, I think it is. It does sort of feel like it's not just it's always election time. But this is the big statewide primary for, the governor's race, I think, is the most interesting thing. We saw a poll come out Thursday.
Berkeley IGS.
Yeah. And top line there, Gavin Newsom has not only held on to, but is expanding his lead.
Yeah. And he's kind of broken. For a while, he was stuck in the mid to high 20s. This poll shows him at 33%. Followed by John Cox, the Republican, who is at 20, and then Antonio Villaraigosa, 13, Travis Allen, the Orange County Republican, right behind Villaraigosa with 12, and then it's Chung, 7, Easton, 4, and 11% undecided. So same dynamic we've seen for a couple weeks now, but it does seem that those differences between the top two and everybody else are beginning to widen.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like Cox, and this is not the only poll sort of reflecting these general trends, has really sort of cemented Republican support first after he got the GOP nomination from the state party, and then, of course, President Trump's tweet a few weeks ago, and then subsequent tweet over the weekend. What interested me about the Democratic side is how much Newsom has pulled ahead of Villaraigosa in places and with voters that Villaraigosa has been targeting for the last year.
Absolutely. I mean, in every region of the state, with the sort of exception of the South Coast, Newsom is ahead. He's well ahead in L.A. County. He's got 35% in this poll to almost twice as much as Villaraigosa. And then the Central Valley, he's at 25, followed by Cox at 20 and Villaraigosa at 13. He spent a lot of time there this week.
And even with moderate voters, he's doing much better. Self-described moderate. So Newsom is. I think that this is looking like we are likely going to have a Republican versus Democratic, sort of an old school race.
Yeah. And if you look, which is, of course, what Gavin Newsom wanted and what Republicans wanted as well.
Yeah. I mean, they're
not
they're
what Villaraigosa wanted. But of course, let's let the voters have the final say.
Yeah. I mean, yes,
it does look. That looks right.
Yeah.
And then interestingly, the IGS poll today also asked people who had already voted how they voted, if they mailed their ballots in early. And Newsom had a slightly wider lead there, 38% to 23% for Cox. Villaraigosa down at 9%, which reflects, I think, the strength he has among Latino voters who tend not to turn in their ballots as quickly or not vote. And also L.A., Los Angelinos just are not as obsessed with politics as people in the North are, at least in the Bay Area.
Yeah, and I mean, early voting is generally an older white sort of demographic, and the numbers so far in there do reflect that. I think we should mention this week, we've seen all these candidates kind of barnstorming across the state. Gavin Newsom kicked off a 30-city tour in San Francisco. I was on the bus with him.
Oh, yeah. How was the ride?
I was having flashbacks to my years covering him at City Hall. It was like, oh, right, this is Newsom. But it was interesting. I did a story for us online about the sort of interesting needle he is trying to thread here, where he is really trying to prop up those progressive credentials that have gotten him to this place statewide, but then also sort of reassure people that he's going to be as fiscally disciplined as Jerry. So.
Which makes you wonder which governor we're going to get if he actually wins, but that's for another day.
And Scott, you've been doing some reporting on the U.S. Senate race. Dianne Feinstein is being challenged by Kevin DeLeon, state senator.
Yeah.
What's that looking like?
Well, we're going to have another poll from Berkeley IGS in a matter of hours. So we'll see what that says. But certainly every poll we've seen up to now shows that Feinstein has a formidable lead. In fact, in one poll, Kevin DeLeon was actually third behind a neo-Nazi Republican.
Although that poll
Republican.
Didn't
yeah,
give everybody the full ticket.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, we're not going to put too much credence in that one. But nonetheless, I mean, I did talk this week with both Kevin DeLeon and with Dianne Feinstein. And, you know, DeLeon, he's had trouble, you know, gaining traction. I think he's really just hoping that if he gets into the top two, that the dynamic will be different in, you know, from in the sprint to November. Not sure how true that is, given that most people don't even know that there are more than two people running.
But he has succeeded in pushing Dianne Feinstein to the left on a number of issues, I think.
Although I asked her about that this week, and she interrupted me even before I could finish the sentence. She swears that the death penalty change happened 2 years ago. The medical marijuana change happened only. What she said was, well, I just want people to follow the law. And now the law is different, so let's follow that law. It's legal. So, you know, kind of not the most.
I mean, California has changed. You know.
California has changed, and she, you know, she has never been sort of a darling of the left. We saw that at the state party convention in February, where DeLeon got 54% of the votes from delegates. So, you know, but she may not need that. And if you look at Democratic voters in the polls, they're solidly with her.
Yeah. All right. Well, quickly before we turn to Irina, Scott, you've been going around San Francisco talking to voters, asking them about their top concerns as we decide in San Francisco who should be our next mayor. Let's take a listen to what some folks said to you.
What do you think is the biggest issue facing San Francisco?
Definitely the homeless.
I mean, I think we all agree that homelessness is huge.
Homelessness. Homelessness, poverty.
Homelessness.
Homelessness. There's a lot of homeless in the street.
Well, walking down Castro Street right now, I would have to say the homeless issue.
I'm sure you've heard it more than once, the homeless situation.
It was really remarkable because literally every single voter, and it's obviously not scientific, but every single voter, one voter said homelessness and traffic, and the rest said homelessness. It's clearly top of mind for everybody. And it's interesting because, you know, the three leading candidates aren't that different
right.
on the issue. And the mayor right now, Mark Farrell, has really pushed to clean up the encampments. So he's kind of raising the bar, I think. I don't know that people are really...
Some people would say lowering the bar,
or
depending on which
yes.
side you're
well,
on.
Well, in fact, I saw a poster. He was like wanted you know, by the homeless advocates because he was being cruel and criminalizing homelessness. But I think, you know, from what I've heard, people... And there was a lot of compassion as well. This wasn't just hard-hearted voters. I mean, one woman said, I'll pay more taxes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is something that we're going to see more conversations about, not just in San Francisco, but statewide as this year progresses. And the November election comes up because it's an issue everywhere. And it is, I think, something that, you know, people are frustrated about for a lot of reasons, but they do also because it's tough emotionally.
Like, it is,
you
yeah.
see people who clearly need help and... Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. Coming up next, we will be joined by California Chief Economist Irina Asmussen. You are listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer, along with Marisa Lagos. And here with us, all the way from Sacramento by train, is State Chief Economist Irina Asmussen. And she predicts where California's fiscal future is headed and, you know, also did a stint at the International Monetary Fund as well, IMF.
Irina Asmussen, welcome to The Breakdown.
Hey there.
Thanks so much for having me.
How was the train ride?
It was great. Capitol Corridor is amazing.
Oh, look at that. Propping it up. Well, you are... A California native, you were born and raised in Davis, where you live.
That's right.
So, and you have three sisters, we understand?
I do have three sisters.
That sounds like a wild household.
My dad was extremely spoiled.
Oh, interesting.
He was spoiled.
He was spoiled.
So tell us about your family, because we were talking, we'll cheat a little bit, we were talking before the show, and, you know, you have sort of a political family.
I do. Both of my parents, at one point or another, were mayors of Davis.
And they didn't run against each other, did they?
No, it was decades apart. My dad was mayor when he met my mom, who was a graduate student at UC Davis.
Hmm. Oh, that's sweet.
Why did they get into politics?
You know, I think they both really believe in public service, and they kind of pass that down to all of us. One of my sisters is a teacher in a Title I school in Fairfield. And so, you know, I think we all believe in... The world is what we make it, and this is the kind of world that we want to live in.
And did you guys talk about that a lot at home, like politics or policy, or did they kind of leave that at the office?
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah.
Well, you told us also about your grandfather, and he seems like he was a character and pretty well known in Davis.
So one of my grandfathers, the reason why I grew up in Davis and the reason why my father grew up in Davis was my grandfather was a noted turkey breeder. He was a professor of avian sciences. There is an Asmussen Hall at UC Davis.
He bred professor of avian science. Yes. I like that.
He bred turkeys to have more white meat.
Hmm. We'll let that stand, I think.
No. Give thanks for him at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and I assume you guys had great Thanksgiving.
Are the turkey demographics changing, though, now? I mean, 40 years later. Just
She's
kidding.
Like, no, we're stopping Irene already. Well, so you ended up going to MIT. You got a PhD at Stanford. You are a numbers person. I guess I'm curious if you thought that that job would lead you into public service and politics. Like, did you always see that as a path?
So I feel like my whole career path was kind of happenstance.
The best ones are.
Yeah. You know, I remember telling my mother after I took calculus in high school, I am never going to take another math class. And then I ended up being a math major, and then I ended up taking an economics class. And one of my professors, Susan Athey, thank you, Susan, said, hey, you're doing pretty well in my class. Have you thought about going to grad school?
And how many women were in those classes?
Not a lot. But, you know,
You persevered.
I kept going. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I went to grad school. And then I was not doing so great. I was kind of floundering. My professor got nominated to be on the Council of Economic Advisors. And, you know, she told me because I was going to have to find another advisor. And I sort of didn't think about it. And I said, oh, you know, congratulations. I'm clearly a little kerfuffled here. But that sounds great. I wish I could do something like that. And she said, well, actually, you could, because it's sort of the tradition that people who are nominated take their graduate students to be staff economists.
Ah. And this is for who now? For the president?
This is for George W. Bush. She ended up not going to be on the council. She ended up going to the IMF. But I still went and I still took a year there and it was amazing.
You know, I feel like we should back up and just ask, like, what do you do? What is the chief economist of California responsible for?
Anything to do with the economy. So I oversee.
So we can blame you. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't have any control over it.
So that recession that the governor has been warning about for 7 years.
Is that you whispering in his ear?
That is actually my fault. You know, he's done an amazing job of sort of looking at history and saying, yeah, good times don't last forever. So don't build this ever-increasing budget. Let's have a rainy day fund. Let's sort of build things in.
Where did that come from? Do you know, like, what prompted him to go in that direction?
I'd like to say that it was me, but I think he was already thinking about it when I came to work for him.
And you came right at the beginning in 2011 or so?
No, I came in 2013.
13, okay.
That's so right. You were there. Ana Montesantos was the director when you got there, and now you work under Michael Cohen. But, like, one of the things I think is really interesting about your job, I know you apologize for the George Bush part, but is that it is a nonpartisan office, right?
I mean,
your job is to give sort of fiscal advice to whoever you're working for and to make projections. But, I mean, is anything truly nonpolitical in the Capitol?
You know, I think that it's very important for the forecast to be seen as nonpartisan because we do have to have some sort of a baseline to figure out how much money are we going to have to spend. And people argue about it. But I think that it is for very good reason that, you know, we try to maintain our credibility. We try and maintain our independence. I'm formally an appointee, but, you know, I'm very protected from the politics.
You say it's non-political, and I believe that. But on the other hand, this governor has been known for having relatively modest revenue projections. The LAO, who works for the legislature, tends to have higher revenue estimates. So what accounts, if not politics, what accounts for those differences?
Well, keep in mind that those differences have gone the other way in the past as well. So, you know, sometimes we are more optimistic than the LAO. Sometimes the LAO is more optimistic than us.
Although I would argue, I mean, it seems that sometimes those overly optimistic revenue projections are to paper over deficits that the governor didn't want to deal, not this governor, but previous governors didn't want to deal with.
That's right. And that's another reason why we want to keep things as sort of nonpartisan as possible.
So when you're looking at the future, because I think people who don't study the budget as closely as we do, and you're welcome that you all don't have to, don't understand, and Brown talks about this, is that like every year the state budget is based on projections. So what kind of things are you looking at when you guys make those projections? And you're looking even further than just next year, right?
That's right. We do a public forecast that's posted on the Department of Finance website that goes out 5 years. And so we look at, you know, employment data and personal income data and GDP data. California is now officially the fifth largest economy in the
world.
But more than that, we also have to look at sort of what the story is about what people are doing to inform how we're interpreting that data.
When you say what people are doing, you mean like consumers and employers?
Consumers and businesses and, you know, how are people choosing to save for the future, or do they have a lot of debt because they stayed in school for a long time? All of that goes into sort of our reading of what's going to happen.
What do you read? Like, what's your raw data that you look at?
Everything.
I'm answering for her. In terms of the data or
yeah,
in terms of...
I mean, like, what do you read? Who do you talk to?
I talked to lots of different people. You know, for example, someone random called me on the phone the other day, and she's a farmer, and she wanted to tell me about her berry farm and what was going on.
And you take that call?
Yeah.
How did she know? Like, how did she know to call you?
It's the internet.
She saw a quote in the paper about how I was saying, in 2017, every sector in California sort of grew on a real basis, except for agriculture. And so she wanted more information about that, and she sort of got directed to me.
That's awesome. So one of the things you guys also project is population.
That's right.
And I'm curious, like I was, when we were researching this, I was just thinking, it's like you're supposed to look at how many babies are going to potentially be born 5 years out and how many people are going to leave California and go. And I'm thinking, like, I didn't know how many babies I was going to have 10 years ago. So what are the things you look at to make those projections?
She knew, by the way.
Yeah, she knew. I could have called Irina up.
We did not know, actually. And so we have a great population team, but we have downgraded our forecasts for the population several times because we thought that it was a temporary thing with the recession. People were wanting to put off having babies. And now it looks like people just aren't going to have those babies.
And so what are the implications of that?
We're going to have a slower growing state. We're probably still going to keep growing. We grow throughout the entire forecast, just a little bit slower. And we're going to have an older population. So there's going to be fewer working people for the retirees.
Yeah. And of course, you know, we could talk about pensions, too. I mean, that's an issue. And how do you think about that? Because that's one of those cans that keeps getting kicked down the road by just about everybody at the state and local level. How do you, as the state's chief economist, think about that?
I'm happy to say that other people think about the pensions part. We do the inputs in terms of the projections for those, but we don't have to balance the books on those.
But does it concern you, or to what extent are you concerned that there is this unfunded liability out there?
The thing that concerns me is that there's a concept in economics called rational expectations, which is people have expectations and different parties all have the same expectations. They all sort of mesh. And the problems come when you get irrational expectations. That is, people have differing expectations. And so if people who are deciding on pensions think that we're going to have lots of new people to pay into the pension system, but we're not actually going to have that, that's where the problem lies.
Interesting. Before I want to ask you something about the governor and those charts we mentioned, but I want to remind everybody that you're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED, and we are talking to California Chief Economist Irina Asmussen. So, you know, you talk about future growth and populations and potential for contractions, but there's something you don't do. And the governor actually joked about it this year at his press conference. I want to play you what he said.
The secret in economics, one of the really important secrets, is that economists never predict a recession. So from the economist's point of view, when they write up these budgets over 5 years, they never say, at this year, there'll be a recession. That's a quirk in the system. So We have to realize that.
And you are laughing over here. Did you expect the governor to call not you out by name, but that was sort of like a calling you out?
I was in the back of the room cheering. But allow me to tell you one of the only economist jokes there are.
Okay.
Which is, economists have predicted 7 out of the last 5 recessions.
Aha. So but some do predict.
But his point is that you say there will be an economic downturn, but you
don't
say
know when.
That's right. And the chart we're referring to is basically this chart of every contraction and expansion and contraction since World War II, and Brown repeatedly pointing out that, like, we're due for one soon, essentially. Is that
I mean,
is
you
that
could
affair?
Say that he's predicted 7 yeah. of the last 5 recessions.
We know that it's going to happen at some point. We don't know when. This recovery has also been very strange. You know, unemployment came down much slower than it typically has. People are still not doing great in a lot of areas. So it could go on for longer than typical, and we could have a record-breaking expansion.
What kind of questions, when you're putting the budget together and, you know, sort of analyzing what's happening, what kind of questions does the governor ask you?
Luckily, Michael Cohen deals with the governor directly.
So he's the buffer. So does he come back and say, oh, the governor wants to know this, that, and the other thing?
Yes. I will sometimes get frantic emails on my iPhone saying, hey, so what was unemployment in 1975?
Does that mean that, because I know Michael Cohen usually has a terrible holiday season as he prepares the January budget, does that mean your holidays are pretty shot every year too?
We're lucky because the revenues have to get done before all of the expenditure stuff. So we turn our stuff over a little bit earlier.
Oh, meeting that deadline.
How do you account for things like, say, the Trump administration, which could have a lot of impacts on California, tariffs, healthcare, the wall, you know, immigration, there's any number of ways, lawsuits.
There are many different ways in which federal policy could affect California. We try not to do scenarios for every single one of those because my staff would go nuts. You sort of do what you can. And
I mean, you're updating these things constantly, I assume, right?
We formally update twice a year. We publish our forecast twice a year. As part of that forecast, we also warn. This goes back to the story of sort of what's going on. We also warn about risks that we're seeing. And one of the risks is clearly federal policy.
When California recently passed, I forget, was it the UK or Japan, and became the fifth largest economy in the world? Like, did you guys pop champagne? Or what? Like, what was the discussion like?
Well, so, you know, clearly California is doing great. California has gone up in the rankings ever since I joined, which is complete correlation and not causation at all. But, you know, we're also above India. And, for example, India has, what, more than
a billion people.
Billion people. 1.2, 1.3 billion people. So I don't think California should expect to be number 5 forever.
Right.
We're doing very well. I think that it's more important that we do well by our people.
Do you think that, though, that like state leaders here, because it is such an economic powerhouse, should or do think of us as almost a nation state? Like, should we be acting differently than a Maine or some place like that that's just smaller?
I think California does see itself as kind of a leader in a lot of instances. You know, we've done a lot in terms of environmental impacts. We've done a lot in terms of other policies. One of the reasons why Silicon Valley is here is because we don't enforce non-compete agreements.
Mm.
So
that's a decision that, yeah, it's kind of like a nation state. So the other thing we've done recently that you, I know, have had to deal with is legalizing marijuana, because one of your jobs as chief economist, right, is to sort of oversee and look at regulations and how they're impacting very big industries. What was it like? Like, you, I assume you kind of had to jump in and learn a lot about an industry you may not have been super familiar with.
I only know about hypothetically and from an economics standpoint, of course.
It's legal. So.
It's funny, you know, I have probably talked about cannabis every single day for at least the last year.
Oh, wow.
I know people like that.
So it's fascinating. And the departments that had to put forward regulations to allow this industry to go legal did a great job. You know, but again, we don't know what's going to happen. And that's the other thing that people should probably know about my job, which is I know I'm going to be wrong. It's just sort of I want to make sure that people understand why I'm making the assumptions that I'm making and know in what different ways that I could go wrong.
I know that your job is, you know, it's not political. You know, you try to stay out of politics, understandably. But we do have an election coming up.
You might have heard.
Jerry Brown is leaving in January, and he's had a very specific style of being prudent and cautious and fiscally conservative. You know, some have other words to describe that. I would like to spend more money. But what, without getting into, you know, individual candidates, what concerns you, what concerns you have about this transition to a new governor, whoever it is?
So Governor Brown has really been wanting to hand over a good situation to the next governor. And the next governor, because of where we are in the economic cycle, is probably going to have to deal with some big issues. And there are things that still need to get fixed about the California economy.
When you say big issues, like what are you thinking? The revenue system?
We don't build enough housing. Our revenue is very volatile. You know, we do have an aging population. I don't know that people have really grappled with that properly. The way we live, if we really do want to meet our environmental goals, has to just be very different. People can't keep driving around or sitting in traffic.
What about all that money he's going to leave behind? I mean, are you concerned that, you know, someone's going to want to get the key to the lockbox?
That is beyond my purview.
Well, one thing I know you do talk about in terms of the future and sort of where the economy is going is automation. And you seem more bullish that it's not going to mean the end of, like, all of us having jobs than some people who are out there kind of talking about the sky falling. Why is that? Like, what? I mean, manufacturing is a huge part of our economy here.
There is more than enough work for everyone. So, you know, we're still going to have people who need to get taken care of. The elderly population probably needs some caretakers. We still have children, even though the birth rate is going down, that need to be educated. We still need people to look after each other and to
those are not,
do things for each
those
other.
Those are not particularly high-paying jobs.
Right now, they're not. And so there's always these shakeouts that happen when big disruptions like this happen. But in an economy, every transaction is between two people. And so we get to choose sort of what we end up having for an economy.
Cool. All right. Well, we only have a couple minutes left, and we like to usually end on a fun note. So I heard that you played on a soccer team when you were at the IMF that was pretty interesting. Can you tell us about who you played with there?
So the IMF is full of soccer fans. And so we had an annual tournament every year. One of the people who was on one of the other teams was Carlo Cotarelli, who was, I think, briefly, because they just, in Italy, they just got a new prime minister. But he had been nominated.
They're always having a new prime minister.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. But he had been nominated to be prime minister.
Oh, fun. And is soccer something you do for fun still, or?
Not anymore. I've retired. I've twisted my ankles too many times.
That happens to the best of us. Irina Asmundson, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
That is going to do it for Political Breakdown this week. The last one before next week's primary. For more elections coverage, check out our archives. You can find them on Apple Podcasts, and you can also rate and review and subscribe to The Breakdown there.
Also, don't miss KQED's detailed new elections page. Our producer, Guy Marzorati, did a ton of work on that, along with KQED's product team, and you can find it at kqed.org/elections.
As you heard, Guy is our awesome producer. Katie Orr is our Sacramento reporter, and our engineer is Seal Muller.
Ethan Lindsay is our managing editor. Holly Kernan is our vice president of news. I'm Scott Schaefer. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Scott Schaefer.
Hey, we didn't mess up that time.
I know.
I'm Marisa Lagos. You can find me at mlagos. That is a wrap for this week's Political Breakdown from KQED. We will see you next time.
Ciao.